Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Drinking Pussy Juice by Catfish McDerrick. I couldn't sleep. Needing warm milk, there was none. The cat had just given birth. Trying to milk her into a shot glass didn't work. Finally, I held Farthead up to my face and sucked right out of her tits. The white liquid was wet and warm and soothing. The light came on, my lady screaming, "You crazy fucking pervert!" I just kept sucking like a feline zombie vampire as she beat me with her house shoe.
Yeah, here we are, another Friday night with pretty much nothing to lose, right? That's the name of the show. We got nothing to lose here tonight, and that was a believe it or not, that was a really hot chick reading some of the work of one of our featured guests here tonight, Catfish McDerrick. Her name is Wonder Hussy. Yeah, and from Drunken Absurdity. Yeah, we'll get to that soon here, but I'm going to bring on my co-host here, Mr. Michael D. Gosinski. Mr. Gosinski, are you there, man?
Hola, Señor Fouché.
Hola, hola, hola indeed. Wow, yeah, so when you get a Wonder Hussy reading your poetry...
Yeah, you know you really made it.
Ding, 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 ding. Bingo. Yeah, you made it. Wow. I've seen the video, and I might have violated myself to it a couple of times. But anyhow, I digress. We have a really cool show here set up tonight. We've got two great guests. I mean, Catfish McDerrick, he's been around, he's been in the scene, been writing poetry and fiction and stuff for over 20 years now, and I'm sure he's going to be fun and wonderful. And then later on in the second hour, we actually have Catrice Cornette. She is a gospel singer, and all that, and we're going to talk about her her new single she just put out called Abba Father, and much more. It will be fun. And eventually, I think our other co-host, Dr. Quinn, will chime in. She's always late, but that's just the way she is. So, yeah. So, anyhow, I've been thinking, man.
Oh, no.
Like, you know, I've been thinking, like, okay, so say you're a boxer or you know, some sort of NFL team, some sort of team. If you had a theme song, like walk-in music, you know, like Eye of the Tiger, the thrill of the fight, you know, or some sort of, you know, theme music, walking in, say, to a poetry event or something, what would it be? What would it be?
Oh, Jesus Christ, I don't know, man.
Surely, come on. Surely you've thought of it.
Yeah.
You have thought of this.
I mean, I'd have to pull out a curveball. You know, I'd have to bust out with something like MC Hammer. They put me in the mix or something.
MC Hammer, huh? Put me in the mix.
Boom! Out of nowhere. You know, it's a paradigm for. I mean, what would you pick? Like Juice Newton or something? What would you go for?
Juice Newton? What are you talking about? No. Oh God. What would be my theme song? Lord.
I mean, you probably thought I'd pick something heavy metal, you know.
I did. I assumed it was going to be some sort of heavy metal for you. Yeah.
Well, see, that's too trendy, you know, like, you know, Triple H, he already had Motorhead to lead him in, so, you know, I couldn't go with the metal, you know. So what would you choose? What would you do?
For me, like, okay,
yeah.
For me, like, walking into what type of event? I mean, it depends on the venue, I guess, the venue, okay?
Well,
what are we talking about?
It's, if you're walking into a poetry event, you'd probably be wearing a diaper instead of trunks. So, you know, I mean, what would you do at a poetry event? What kind of?
Oh, you know what? Probably the theme song to Captain Kangaroo. You're probably too young to even remember that.
Oh, no, I remember. I never forget scary pedophiles.
Oh, boo, boo.
I was more, believe it or not, of a lamb chop kind of kid.
Ew, really?
I used to watch the woman with the sock puppets. I don't know why. I watched the woman with the sock puppets on her damn hands.
Women with sock puppets. See right there.
Yeah,
that sounds like a title for my next chapbook.
Yeah, there you go. See, that, you know, Catfish McDerris gets, you know, Wonder Hussy to read his poetry. I would have a woman with sock puppets who would read mine, you know, some crazy stuff.
Right,
nuts.
Right. That's great. You know, something else that really caught my attention this week, and you know, it's obvious. I have a crush on Miley Cyrus right now. But, you know, I used to, back in like 1990, I had a huge crush on Sinead O'Connor. And when I saw Sinead O'Connor write this open letter to freaking Miley Cyrus, you know, it's like, oh, boy, here we go. Here we go. It's just...
okay. You know, as I say, either Sinead O'Connor is a woman who was no longer relevant, so she had to rip up or burn a picture of the Pope so people would care about her again, so she's kind of a hypocrite.
See? Oh, well, I agree. I concur. Absolutely, 100%. And, oh, my gosh, I think Dr. Quinn, she's perpetually late. I mean, what, Dr. Quinn, are you there?
I am here, gentlemen.
There she is.
Dr.
Yay! She's finally home from another football game. How'd it go? How was the football game?
Well, I kind of, aside from the fact that I kind of got into a pissing match with my editor, okay, I guess.
Well, that's not good.
Over,
you don't want to
over
get
high school football?
Here's the thing. I got a note from him because, okay, I write my story, and I put in parentheses the records of the teams, and I don't actually know the records of the teams. So, you know, I mean, what have I not been telling you guys that I don't know about football? I've been telling you this all season. I don't pay attention. I don't give a shit. I wait for my one editor to send me the information that I need to know to incorporate my story, which I would hope would include records, but they didn't. So, of course, you know, in the 20 minutes that I have to write the story, I, of course, try to look for the records.
Wow.
To see if I could find them, which I didn't. And so I got this note back chastising me that, you know, Quinn, you have to have the records, because I don't have time to look them up on deadline. And it was kind of like, you don't think I tried to look them up? Because I did.
Well,
oh,
you know
anyway,
what? You know what? It amazes me that you you still have a job. Wow. Yeah, so hey, yeah, to get you up to speed, first of all, quickly, very quickly, Dr. Quinn, theme song.
Yes.
If you had a theme song, this is what we started off with. If you had a theme song, like, say, you know, boxers and, like, some, you know, like, football team that walk in with, like, a theme song going, what would yours be?
I was asked that question as a senior in high school.
Uh-huh.
And what did I choose way back when?
We don't know. That's why we're asking.
Just have a tart moment?
I think at the time I said something like David Lee Roth, because at the time he could wear, you know, buttless pants and get away with it.
Yeah, well, David
so
Lee Roth isn't a theme
David
song.
Roth.
I mean, what David Lee Roth song? Spit it
probably
out.
Back then it was just Gigolo.
Really? Wow. Okay.
Yeah, but again, it was only because I could get away with wearing buttless pants. Now,
I still wear those. Fuck you.
Well,
all right.
Now.
So you want to show? You trying to show off your rose ass tattoo or what?
No, I just thought it was funny at the time. Now, if I had to choose a theme song, probably.
Say you were walking into a big poetry event, you know, and you had the red carpet and everything, and you were like, you know, you were the headliner. You were the headliner. What would it be? What would it be? Come on, Quinn. Come on, Dr. Quinn. Dr. Reverend Quinn, I mean.
I'm telling you, Ballroom
okay.
Hero by the Dropkick Murphys.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. I can live with that. All right.
There you go.
And next thing, very quickly, to get you up to speed,
yes.
Sinead O'Connor, you know, with her open letter to Miley Cyrus, you know, what's that all about?
You know, I heard you guys talking about that, and I kind of applaud Sinead for giving Miley the business.
Oh, boy. Here we go. Okay.
Yeah.
Here we go.
What's that supposed to mean?
Oh, nothing.
What is that
This is fodder for later in the show, for sure. We are going to go head-to-head and debate it. Oh, boy. You bet your sweet ass.
All right.
But, you know, in the meantime, Gosinski, man, regardless
yeah.
of authority number three, man,
yes.
stellar lineup.
It has Catfish McDerriff in it.
It does have Catfish in it. John
Krakowski. JFK, good piece.
This has been the best issue yet, in my opinion, of regardless of authority. John Krakowski, James Babbs,
so.
Yeah, William Taylor Jr., Cassandra Dallet, J.J. Campbell, I mean, Bradley Mason Hamlin, Tim Murray.
That Tim Murray piece is the funniest damn piece I've ever read in my life. I was in hysterics reading the damn thing. It's called, excuse me, Life is Like an Ocean of Toenail Clippings. It's really good.
See, the guy is hilarious.
He
and I probably stayed up pretty much all night laughing and giggling over a stupid movie, old black and white 1969 movie. But anyhow, So what was it like for you putting this latest issue together? I mean, how's it going with Regardless of Authority?
You know, I can't do anything without contributors, and so you know, I've been really fortunate. People sent me some solid work, and it's just this one kind of came together at the end. You know,
right.
It was like a last week or so. I kind of went, all right, good. I've got, you know, good work here. I've got, you know, William Taylor Jr. actually sent his submission like the last day I was looking at submissions. So it really came together at the end. It was, you know.
Yeah, that's the way it works sometimes, man. I know. Believe me, I know. And this has been the most solid issue yet. It just seems like Regardless of Authority keeps getting better and better. And you know what? I'm looking forward to that first issue of Blotterature. Blotterature, hello, Dr. Quinn. I know you're a part of the Blotterature.
Yeah,
hello.
What do you guys want to know? We're still taking submissions. We've got about a month to go.
Uh-huh.
And we need more art. Come on, people.
Art?
Send us your art. Send us your creative nonfiction.
That's going to be harder to come by than poetry.
We found that out, Quinn. You know, a lot of people don't submit the art. So what we wind up doing a lot of times is we got to solicit people for the art. We find an artist we like, and then it goes from there.
And that is what we shall do, because this is
pretty hard to get art. And then you ask somebody, they're like, hey, you know, would you like to contribute? They're like, oh, yeah, I've got, you know, 25 photos here, man. You know, it's like they send you a ton of work. You're like, well, why didn't you just submit to begin with?
Right.
So, Catfish McDerriff, our number one featured guest here tonight on the show. He is in the latest edition of Regardless of Authority. And you know what? Let's bring him on and let's pick his brain, because you know, I'm already beyond intrigued. I mean, you get a wonder hussy reading your stuff. I mean, come on. All right, we're going to bring on Mr. Catfish McDerris. Catfish McDerris, you are on live. Hello.
Hey, man. How's it going?
Hey, what's up, Catfish?
What's that guy there? Where's a diaper on there?
I'm always wearing one. Either I shit all over the place. But hey, welcome on the show and thanks for coming on, man.
Thank you.
Wow. Yeah. You've been around in the scene, and I hate to even call it a scene, but I mean, you've been writing. You've been a writer, poet, and everything for years and years and years, and boom, here you are. Wow. It's great to have you on. And, I don't even know where to start with you, buddy. You were born in Albuquerque? Is that something to brag about or not?
Yeah, man. Albuquerque's a great town. That's the number one town. I grew up in Clovis, though, New Mexico.
Uh-huh.
That's like more about 10 miles from Texas.
Uh-huh.
It's nothing to speak of, but I've been up around Milwaukee for about 35 years now.
Right.
I live in a suburb of Milwaukee.
Milwaukee,
Wisconsin.
Yeah.
The land of beer and cheese.
Oh, are you a Green Bay Packers fan? Just asking.
I like boxing and I like bullfighting.
Boxing and bullfighting, that's an excellent combination. Yeah. I like boxing too. So, hey, man. All right. What initially turned you on to writing and poetry and fiction or whatnot? I mean, how'd you even get into that? I mean, what spurred that whole moment in your life? I mean, how did you get inspired?
Well, I kind of was autodidactic, you know, self-taught. I dropped out of school early and bummed around, ended up reading all the time, went in the Army. I started writing long letters, took a few college classes, got my GED, and then took the college classes.
Yeah.
And then, kept bumming around. You know, I'd write a few things, you know, never really try to get published.
Right.
And then I got in the post office here in Milwaukee, and I discovered the Beats and Bukowski early on, you know, with his post office stuff. And there was a big poetry scene here in Milwaukee. Antler was here. He's still here. And a lot of really great poets. We're not too far from Chicago, an hour and a half by train or car. And that was where the Green Mill is. That's where the Poetry Slam started. And I went down there and I practiced my chops down there and down here. And the scene was so okay, like you guys got your scene with Michelle and Tim and you, Brian, and a bunch of other ones that travel around, you know, together and do poetry reads.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get in a group like that, if you get on the stage and stuff and you can hold your own on the stage, then you can hold your own anywhere, you know. And Milwaukee had that kind of scene here, you know. So then I started doing some traveling. I got to go read with a bunch of beatniks in 98 up at Allen Ginsberg's farm. And that was kind of got to read with Ed Sanders of the Fugs, Ann Wallman, David Amram. He used to play backup for Kerouac, Ray Bremser. He was like a prison 12 years in prison writing poetry. Kerouac wrote the intro to his first chapbook, and I got real close with them. And before that, I got some books from signed books from Ginsberg and Burroughs, and so I kind of used that to pay for my trip from Milwaukee to Utica, New York, where I got off the train and ended up in Cherry Valley, New York, where I ended up doing that read. And then I also got to read in Paris at the Shakespeare and Company bookstore. And that was a unique experience. It wasn't a big deal, though, you know. But I've had a lot of good readings, you know. And the thing is, though, you know, it's hard to sell books and stuff. And I made a lot of chapbooks through the years. My biggest seller was Prying. And I did that by meeting Jack Michelin. And he gave me four unpublished poems by Bukowski. And Michelin threw in some poems, and he told me to write three nasty stories, which I did, and we put that together, and Prying was like four book poems he wrote in 74, and let's see, Michelin, I think he had about five or six, and Michelin, man, he's an excellent poet.
Oh, yeah.
And he died, I think, in 2001. And Bukowski died in 94. But that Prying, a little chapbook, man, it's, you know, I saw it online for like $65 and stuff like that. It came out like $4 or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, you keep some, now with pay on demand and, you know, Lulu.com, and anybody can, you know, make hardcovers and, you know, with computers, anybody can really make chapbooks, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's changed. You're right. You're right. With all the social media and all the technology at our fingertips now, anybody can pretty much, publish, you know, whatever. I don't know if that's in some ways it is a good thing, and in other ways it's kind of, you know, detrimental. I mean, detrimental, I mean, in the fact, not that people can communicate and spread their word or their art, but detrimental in the fact that, it kind of, you know, when you have something very unique, like what you were just talking about, you know, as far as like a print book or something like that, I mean, it's just, I totally see what you're saying. Totally get it. And, I got to ask, okay? All right. You have been around the block once or twice, or three or four times.
Under the block, round.
There was rumors. I remember quite a few years ago that you had passed away.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Was that intentional, or what was that?
Oh man,
all about?
Okay, 10 years ago.
Yeah, it probably was about 10 years ago,
It was. I can tell you exactly when it was, man. It was, anyway, 10 years ago, when I was 50 years old, I just turned 60.
Uh-huh.
I've always been bipolar and had anxiety attacks and all this shit, man. Anyway, for all those years, I was drinking a lot, and I was taking a lot of lithium and Seroquel, and finally they changed it to Depakote and Xanax and Clonazepam, and you just name it, and I was taking it, man.
Jeez,
and,
that's hardcore.
I was fully fucked up, man. I was at the post office. I had to be on. I'm still married to the same woman for 30 years. We got a 25-year-old daughter, but I was losing my mind, man. I just lost it, you know.
Uh-huh.
I just lost it, and I decided to kill myself on my 50th birthday. I took all these bottles of pills, man, and they were just brand new prescription. I took like 6 bottles of pills, and I drank like 4 bottles of wine and a couple 40-ouncers, and I decided to die, man. My wife, they had a breakdown in the door. She called the ambulance, and they took me to the hospital, and they threw me in the nut house, and I was in the nut house for a while, and then I got into rehab, and that didn't really work. You know, it worked for a while and stuff, man, but then I decided to kill myself again the second time, and this time I got Jose Cuervo and weed and decided to row out into Lake Michigan, you know, and I got out there and Coast Guard saved my ass. And then the last...
Are you serious? Are you making that up? I mean, that just almost sounds like a fun story. Are you serious?
This is all serious, man.
Oh,
this
man, okay,
happened.
That's great. Okay,
hey,
no,
you
no, want to no.
know I'll tell you the story.
Kill it!
Yeah. The third time I decided I split from my wife by this time.
Uh-huh.
And I had quit my job where I was able to get it back and get my wife back and everything. But by this time I'd quit my job and I decided the third time I went and rented a brand new Cadillac and I took a hose, a garden hose and duct tape, and I decided to kill myself in the luxury of a Cadillac. And buddy of mine found me, and all this time I was trying to go through AA, I was trying to go through doctors, I was trying to get straight and all this shit, and none of it worked, man. Anyway, this last time this guy helped me, he took me to the VA, man. So I went in to a 6-month program here in Milwaukee at the Veterans Hospital, because I do have honorable discharge from the Army. I was in the Army for 3 years. So I went in for 6 months, man, and it was like, whew, shit, man. Yeah, they put you in 180 meetings in 90 days, you know, and they were AA, NA, CA. Every day you have to stay in there, and you're like, they have spot checks for weed, for alcohol, anything, man. But if you stay in there, you're good to go, man. But anyway, so I completed the program, and they more or less, they give you the chance to fuck up, but if you don't, man, they're going to teach you how to live a new life, man. And I've been clean since I got out of there. I was able to get my job back,
mm-hmm.
my wife back, but I haven't been able to get my daughter back, man. She hasn't talked to me for 10 years. But what happened was everybody thinking that I died. I was trying to walk away from the small press, but I was you get so fucking caught up in it that you're hooked,
yeah.
man. It's like heroin, man. You get so
yeah.
many people that are depending on you that you love them like your family, and sometimes your
right.
priorities are all screwed up. And at that time, you're talking about, okay, we were just going into computers, man, but before you sent out a SASC with your work, and then it comes back, and you're living every day for what's coming in the mailbox today. Did I get a reject? Did I get acceptance? You know, who did I get in with? You know, did I get in with Ginsburg this time? How about Bukowski? You know, what's this, Ferlinghetti? You know, and you're waiting to see who you're going to get in with and all this shit, man. Hey, you can let this shit eat you alive, man. And I know you got kids. Don't let
mm-hmm.
that shit fuck you up, man, because poetry will fuck you up. The small press will fuck you up if you let it. You got to have your priorities set.
Right. Hey, and you know what? So I know you mentioned Bukowski and, you know, you working in the post office and
yeah.
all that. So I kind of get that connection, you know, post office. I've read that Bukowski novel and all that. And then, you know, you have this really crazy book that you did with an Aussie author and publisher, Ben John Smith. You did a collaboration called Dancing Naked on Bukowski's Grave, you
yeah.
know, with Ben John Smith of Horror Slee's Trash.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's one of my buds, man. Another one I did was Tales from French Envelope with Craig Scott.
Oh, yeah?
That's another really good one, man. Craig's really good, too, man. I like
yeah,
both
Craig's
those.
A good writer. I like Craig.
They're both good guys, man. I just want to make an announcement for all the people that like Bukowski, man. This Silver Birch Press just came out with a new Bukowski anthology, and this is a really masterpiece, man. I got a real small poem in there about my daughter when she was 8 years old, and she got published with Bukowski, and she did. But, people should look that one up. It's a really good one, man. And Silver Birch, man, when they send out some ads for submissions and stuff, man, they do real good work. And the same thing with Blue Hour, too, man. Yeah, they're both real good spots, you know, and they're pretty new out there, you know.
Yeah, so what was it like working with Ben John Smith?
Man, he's nuts, man.
I know he's nuts.
Yeah.
In a good, fun way, yeah. What was that like? What was that collaboration like?
He's an excellent writer. I'm older than his parents, you know, but we still got along good, you know. When he wants to write, he can really write good, man. He sees some deep shit, you know. And I learned a lot about Australia. I ended up with three real good friends from Oz. That's what they call it, O-Z, Oz.
Right, right.
And Benny, man, he's nuts, man. I mean, he can tell, you know, we stay in touch all the time. And, you know, I just put a little video of him reading one of my poems, you know, on Facebook, man, and he's nuts. Hey, okay, let me tell you, you were talking before about Wonder Hus. I don't know where the hell, she did two of my poems, not just one.
Oh,
but,
really?
You
got more
yeah.
than one from Wonder Hussy, huh? Wow.
Yeah, I don't, man, this all came out of my buddy Adam Sherling, and he's another guy that's just like, Ben John Smith. He runs Drunken Absurdity.
Uh-huh.
And it's from the U.S. It's from, like, New England, I think Rhode Island or somewhere. Anyway, he made me his U.S. correspondent at large, man, which means nothing. But, you know, I send him every once in a while. I don't know, out of the blue, he says, hey, Catfish, I got something for you I want to show you. And he sends me these two, you know, with his chick, you know, squirming around on the floor in a bikini and shit, you know, Wonder Hussy, man. And I was laughing like hell, man. I said, oh, man, what are you going to do? But, yeah, it's kind of cool, you know.
Yeah, well, don't you have like, something newer coming out here or that is out called Jupiter Orgasma?
Out, man. That's out. That's out? That's my masterpiece. Yeah, man. That was my last book. It's a hardcover. It's from Lulu, and it's got a 9-chapter novella in there that I call The Painter, and it's about my hippie days up in the New Mexico mountains. I kind of superimposed my adventures onto a guy that paints naked women into an orgasms, having orgasms. That's his thing, man.
Wow.
And,
okay.
And in this chapter, he finds a woman, and he gets laid or blown in each chapter, man. And this French guy was going to do he was going to do it on his site. He was a French gay guy, and he said it got him so hot, he was on the bus in France going to work, and he gave him a hard-on. He was gay, man. Anyway, the guy was supposed to do some translations, and nothing happened, so I kind of pulled back from him, you know. Sometimes deals just don't work out, you know. That's okay, though.
Well,
I got
okay.
some more Yeah,
well,
go ahead.
Well, you say you feel like that was probably some of your best work or your better work as far as poetry goes, or... I mean,
yeah,
what?
Man, that's my latest stuff, all new, you
uh-huh.
know, Jupiter Orgasma. Yeah, that's my best one. I got another little one that I still have some copies of, you know, that I did with Subhankar Das. He's one of my partners that's in Calcutta, India.
Uh-huh.
And he, it's called Naked Fly Cherry Marijuana. And,
sounds great.
This guy, another Australian buddy of mine, he painted this naked lady in a bathtub for the cover, man. And Subhankar sent me like 50 copies, you know. And I said, how many copies are you printing? And he says, I'm going to print 250 first run. And he says, I'm going to give you 50
wow.
free. And I was like, oh, man, I don't even want that many, you know. Forever, man. But Yeah. Anyway, that Wonder Hussy. Hey, you guys were talking about Captain Kangaroo and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I was listening to you, know, Captain Kangaroo and what was the one, the Lamb Chops and all
yes,
that?
Yes, Lamb Chops.
Let me tell you about this guy that I know. He was, this guy was pretty damn famous and an excellent poet. His name was Seaborn Jones, and he lives in Lizella, Georgia. And I haven't heard from him in about 10, maybe 15 years, but he was married to the princess on the Mr. Rogers show. Remember Mr. Rogers?
Yeah.
Mr.
Rogers,
oh, yeah,
neighbor.
Mr. Rogers, yeah.
He was married to the princess, man, Princess Leia or whatever the hell her name was.
Carrie Fisher?
Anyway, he worked at a snake ranch in Lizella, Georgia, and he wrote some damn good poetry, man. And he had his job was to milk poisonous snakes so he could get venom for antidotes and stuff, man. But he got bit a few times, so I don't know if he's still alive.
That's
what I was
Richard,
talking about Captain Kangaroo.
That's a high-risk occupation, man.
Yeah, hell yeah, man. I wrote a story about a guy working on a skunk ranch in Texas.
Skunk ranch.
And he had to masturbate the skunks. That was his job. It was for a French. It was for a French perfume company because the French sperm, the skunk sperm, they used it in perfume, you know, to make it go farther. So the guy decided he was going to go off on his own, so he invested in a bunch of skunks, and one of those Texas tornadoes come along and
Texas tornado, huh?
And he was basically fucked, man.
Now,
I shouldn't be.
Now you said you've been clean for you know many years now, right? Now a lot of writers I hear say, you know, they got to drink or they got to, you know, get messed up so they can write. Do you think your writing has gotten better since you've cleaned up?
Oh, yeah, man. Hell yes. Before, when I drank, you know, I could write. I mean, it still opens your mind up, you know, when you're all loose and stuff, you can think of shit. But you can, I mean, now I still take drugs, man. I mean, I take a lot of drugs, you know.
Right.
For, you know, I take Depakote and Seroquel, and they're both real strong drugs, you know. And if I have a panic attack, I take a Xanax. But I haven't taken a drink in, well, it'll be 10 years next June 5th, you know.
Wow,
but,
congratulations.
Yeah, well, it's still, you know, you got to keep it a day at a time. I think I miss tobacco more than alcohol, though, man. Every once in a while
tobacco,
I walk.
I think it's harder to quit than alcohol. I've
seen
people
hooked
on tobacco. Wow.
I quit while I was in the Army.
I quit
here and there, you know, all during my life. I quit for 25 years while I was married, you know. And then one day, man, I picked up a cigar, and the next thing I knew, I was toking away, man. And then I started picking up. Then I went back to weed, man. That was real bad.
Weed. I know all about that wacky tobacco.
Hey, man, I forgot how much I liked it, man. I loved it when I was young, man. I used to love that shit, man. And then I quit for probably 20, 25 years. I got to tell you about the last time I was on the radio, man. It was with a guy here in Milwaukee. And the guy, he was playing a bunch of music, and I had to go in the studio with him and stuff. And he hands me a joint. He lights up a joint, and he hands it to me, man. And I'm already nervous, man. And I never met guy or anything, man, and we're sitting there toking away, and I says, don't you think somebody's going to come in here? He said, don't fucking worry about it, man. We see some cops walking by, and he's still toking away. Then he gives me that, we start talking on the mics and stuff, and I've never even met the guy, man, and he says, yeah, man. He says, oh, this is Catfish McDears, greatest poet in Milwaukee, man. We know him way back, you know, and before we know it, we start talking about bovine flatulence in Milwaukee and how it's polluting all the rivers and the air and all this shit. It starts getting nuts, man.
Oh, bovine flatulence.
Yeah, bovine flatulence, yes.
That's
bovine.
A good name for a chapbook.
Yes, absolutely. That's the name of my next chapbook. I've got at least two titles now.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, man. So what kind of reaction do you get with that diaper? You don't take I mean...
Wow, the whole diaper thing, yeah. Some people get it and laugh.
Go, really
uh-huh.
Want to know, Brian.
And other people really get pissed off. Just literally offended and pissed. Oh, yeah, they do.
You don't ever put any Tootsie Rolls in there or anything like that, do you?
I literally pissed live in my diaper at one point. There's video evidence of it.
Okay.
I digress.
Take a leak, you know?
Yeah. It was a very strange sensation, you know. Probably one I hadn't felt since I was probably, you know, 2 years old or, you know, 1 year old or whatever, when you still piss in a diaper. So I couldn't relate to it because, you know, we don't remember that. But it felt very warm and very, very different, very warm and wet. Warm and wet. Wow, kind of the way I like my women.
Yeah.
But anyhow, I digress. Thanks for the question. You have any more for me?
I was just going to tell you a couple of things, you know, about... I think poetry, you know, people just get up there and... Like, I don't know if you know who Fred Voss is. He's married to Joan Job Smith, and she, like, edited Pearl and the Bukowski Review.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, he's like a, you know, he kind of knew Bukowski. He's an L.A. poet, and he's been around the block. He was one of the guys that read when the Bukowski Anthology, this Silver Birch, they just had a reading out in California, and he read my poem. Anyway, I was listening to it, and it was just, you know, when I listen to poetry readings, sometimes they just, you know, they kind of make you want to nod off unless somebody does something outrageous, you know, and brings in, like, vaudeville and raises some hell or starts screaming. Like, I was talking to Michelle, and I was telling her some of the crazy reads that I was at.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you guys saw that picture. I used to do like a Urkel and Pee Wee Herman, you know, gay routine, you know, and I'd talk for one of them and talk for the other one and talk for the other one, and then people would start getting all crazy, you know, and some of them started wanting to get all pissed off, but that was one of them that really kind of irritated people. But I had another one, I went down to the Salvation Army and I got all these women's panties. And I tried to get the biggest, ugliest panties I could find, man. And I must have had like about 15 pair one night, man. And I started reading and I says, and this is going to be my reverse Tom Jones poem, man. And I'd read a few words and then I'd throw a big pair of panties, you know, and try to land them on some woman's head and shit, man. And I started throwing these panties out into the audience, man, and they were fucking going crazy, man. It was a good time, man.
Sounds
Another
like it.
Was, we used to have these guy. It was a gay guy, and he had a long beard, but he'd always come, and he'd be the master of ceremonies with a dress, you know, and he'd wear these little dainty dresses, you know, sometimes mini skirts, you know, all this stuff, man. He was gay as hell, and he'd always bring in, like, loads of fake money, you know. He'd bring, like, a briefcase, kind of like he was the Blues Brothers, you know, and then he'd have some fake dollar bills there, you know, and he'd be out there and twitching around and all that shit, you know. And at that time, I was working with a guy that played the bass. And so we'd be up there, and my buddy would be playing bass, and I'd be reading and shit. And after everybody read, after each poet read, he'd hand them a bundle of money, you know, like he was paying them off, you know. And one time we got up there, I think I was the second reader, and he comes and he opens He opens his suitcase of money, and there's like a big audience too, man. And I grabbed the suitcase from him, and I just started throwing it in the air, all this money, man, and it was just coming down everywhere. And he was just running around screaming, man, in a little woman's voice, man. It was shit, man.
That's crazy. Man, you apparently have been involved in a lot of crazy live readings and everything, man. That's wow.
Yeah, man.
I admire
a lot
that.
Of them. I counted
I
two.
Really do. And I admire your writing too, buddy.
I used
no
to
doubt
count,
about it.
You know how the Indians count coup with a stick? You know, like a instead of killing their enemies, they have like a power stick, you know, like a stick with some feathers and, you know, beads and shit and like a little rattle and shit like that. And
yeah.
instead of killing their enemy, they just go and touch him with it, you know. I'd go around and get all the poets and fucking count. And they would get so pissed off, man. I piss off a lot of people, man.
You would just touch them with this little stick thing then, huh?
I have my little stick, man, like my little magic wand, man. Like, you fucking asshole, what are you doing, man?
That's great. Wow, you're giving me a lot of bad ideas.
I tell you this one right here. This is the best one to use, Brian. And you
okay,
don't
okay,
have
let's hear it. Let's hear
have
it.
Any props or anything. You
okay.
Wait until everybody gets in the, you know, hopefully you got a decent room of people, because most of the readings, there ain't nobody there except for the ones they want to read too, you know.
Right.
But anyway, and maybe their husbands or wives. But you have everybody, you know, up there and kind of looking towards the podium or the front of the room and everything. Just go way in the back, man, and then just start screaming. And then read your first poem in the back of the room. Don't go to the front. Make them all turn around, man. And then as you start on your second poem, then start walking real slow to the front.
That is brilliant.
Do it like an Apache war whoop all the way down the aisle.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that'll get them. I did that I was up all the beatniks, man. They were fucking bored.
Wow. See, there
yeah,
we go.
There's a lot of ways you can stir up, you can have some fun reading, you know.
Uh-huh. Oh, absolutely.
It's boring, man, you know, like, I don't know.
Oh, I agree. I agree with you. And I hate to admit it, that many, you know, many times, you know, you go to a lot of these readings, live readings, and, you know, it is kind of a snore fest, just like, you mentioned. And, just like, you know, you got to kind of shake it up a little bit and get people's attention, like, hey, pay attention, you know? And sometimes you have to be, you know,
right,
a little outrageous there. And you give me some great ideas, buddy. You're bad
and
influence
you get
on me.
You with your friends, and you're going to, and when you do it, I want you to record some of my ideals and you do it, especially do the panties, the one from the back of the room, man. You can also,
brilliant.
here's another idea I wrote in it. I never used it myself. You get a cat box, man, a cat litter box, and pour some litter in there and just say, oh, no, my wife is using the bathroom again, and she's got her coffee people over here for a book meeting, and they're reading, and I can't. And now I have to go to the basement and use a cat litter. And it's not in the
Jesus Christ. Well, okay, you know what?
When I wrote,
wow,
I
you're
never...
giving me way too many good ideas here, buddy, and you're going to get me in trouble, but, you know, I'm going to do it. The next poetry reading I'm involved with, there's going to be a litter box. There we go. Holy shit. You crack me up, man. That's great.
Yeah, Michelle thought we'd hit it off pretty good. So are your other friends? Is Michelle still here and Mike?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Yeah,
Dr. Quinn and Mr. Gosinski, do you guys have any questions for
I had a question, but I don't know if it's too deep and would bring the mood kind of down.
Mood bringing down.
It's bringing down, baby.
Well, okay, so you said there were two or three suicide attempts.
Three.
Okay.
Yeah.
What made you decide to not do it again? Or what made you want to live?
My wife, my daughter, you know.
Okay.
I had to get rid of religion to find God, if that makes any sense.
Oh, that makes total sense, yeah.
Absolutely.
Sometimes you got to get rid of it to find that higher power, you know, have it inside you. And I kind of needed to be retrained, you know. I was 50 years old, but shit, man. You know, I had to have my circuits rewired and stuff, you know. But the bad thing I did to the small press was, I wrote a fake letter. The worst thing was I wrote a fake letter and played like it was my daughter and that I had died and they had sprinkled my ashes in Mexico. And at that time, I was contributing editor to Latino Stuff Review for over 10 years with this Cuban lady. I had a lot of real good friends that were in the small press, and they gave up on me. I mean, and they still have tried to make amends, but, you know, they don't accept my apologies. So,
yeah. Well, you know, I think a lot of people have gotten beyond that. I mean, you know.
Maybe some have, but a lot of them don't forgive me, man. A lot of them. I had my buddy in Belgium that used to translate all my stuff into French, man. He said I made him cry and he'll never talk to me again. I had I was getting a little too tight with a lot of women too, you know, and they were like all upset, and I had all kinds of stuff that was, you know, like, this one guy said I was trying to act like Mark Twain, that people, he said people grossly overestimate my demise and all this stupid shit, you know. And I was just fucked up, man. I screwed up, you know, and I apologize.
Yeah.
But
we all do, and that's all just part of life. And then we, you know what, we fucking pick ourselves up and we move forward, you know, and you definitely have, and you still have a lot of great stuff going on, man. And I love and I admire that. And
Well, I probably would have. I even tried not to even come back, man. I tried not to even. At the time, it was real weird, man. When I went in the VA and I was in there 6 months, and I was in a dorm room with three other guys, and they were all most of them, it was 80% black convicts from Hines, and Hines is like almost like a prison down in Chicago. And at that time it was rough, man. It was real rough, man. It's like,
yeah, no doubt.
But you know, I just hung in there, you know, and I helped a lot of them, you know, learn to use a computer a little bit and all that time. And I tried to come back a little bit at a time, but and it was weird because at that same time I was on Oprah Winfrey's list of great writers and shit, man. And I'm like,
really?
What?
Wow. Oprah?
Yeah, I had this little, it was like a internet chat book. It was called Destroy Yourself.
Uh-huh.
And it was really, you know, out there, the whole damn thing, man. And Oprah had me all over her websites and stuff, and I was like, shit, what the hell? Supposed
wow.
to be dead. But anyway,
wow,
yeah. Well, you're going to hear that. I mean, oh, yeah, that's the guy that faked his death. Well, the worst part was I used my daughter.
Yeah.
And,
I had no idea that even occurred, but, you know.
Oh, yeah. It was worse than you probably heard, and there's still people that don't like me, and there's some people out there I don't like. I got some people that made a movie about me, man. Catfish is
a movie? Really?
Yeah, 30-minute movie on YouTube called Catfish is Dead. One day I was looking for a poem, and I come upon this movie, and I see three of my friends, man, and they made this movie about me, man. It's called Catfish is Dead. And I was like, what the fuck, man? And it was bad. It was real bad. And I tried to get it, and then I wrote my friend, my ex-friend that made it, and he said he was sorry, and he took it off. It was still on there, but I couldn't get it, man. He had blocked me somehow or other, man. And I tried to make a complaint with YouTube and all this shit, and finally I talked to the guy, and he says, I'll let you have it, but you can't show it on Facebook or anything like that. And it was kind of strange. I just got an apology from the guy, from one of the guys I hadn't heard from today, you know. But but there's some of my friends that haven't forgiven me, you know, and I guess,
well,
what can
you know.
I do?
I
gotta, at least you got your wife, man.
Yeah, I got to go get a stent in my heart pretty soon, so who cares, Beth? This might be my last go-round anyway. You got to take it a day at a time, man, for whatever
right.
It is.
One day at a time. That's pretty much the way I take it. I mean, believe me. Jeez. I get it.
Yeah.
I totally get it. So what's next for you, man? Are you still writing? Is this correct?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're still writing poetry, fiction?
Every day, man.
And what do you prefer, poetry or fiction?
Either one. Just whatever. I'm a storyteller primarily. I mean, whether
right.
It comes out in a poem or prose or whatever. I just got some. I'm going to have some stuff come out in Bengali. That's going to be translated probably next month. Like I said, that Bukowski anthology. I'm going to be a contributing editor for Silver Birch's Erasure for noir poetry. That you guys know what that is? Erasure stuff. It's like where you take a page of like a Pulp Fiction, you know, a book, and then
uh-huh.
you scan it, and then you take a ruler, kind of like word search, and you mark out the words, and then you make your own poem out of it. She's Melanie Griffin. I was gonna say Melanie Villanese, the editor's gonna have one of those coming out. And she's always got anthologies. She just got a new thing on Facebook called Bukowski on Rye, and it's WRY. But yeah, like I said, that Silver Birch is real good. It's kind of crazy. I got this fan letter from a lady named Alexis. I forget all her name. Fancher, Bouchard, or something like that. Anyway, she has a show on Cultural Weekly in Los Angeles, and she gets like 10,000 people reading that or watching it and all that stuff or whatever they do. Anyway, she's going to feature me in mid-February, and I got some stuff coming out.
A lot of exciting stuff.
I'm always sending stuff out and usually getting rejected. And I got one coming out in Yellow Mama.
Oh, Yellow Mama. Yeah, that's a good one. I like Yellow Mama. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah,
what do you have? Is it fiction or flash fiction or poetry? What?
It's a poem about
uh-huh.
me killing a guy. And my brother called me out to Oklahoma, and he wants me to help him clean up the town, so I have to put a double tap on this dude and I kill his ass. Kill him off. Fuck. You know, just
man,
one of those
guys.
I
tell you, you have
big,
so much going on, man. So much. And you've been around doing this stuff for so long. It just, I admire that. I mean, seriously.
Well,
me, you're a legend. I mean, I knew about you, Mr. Catfish McDerris, before I even started zagging my coffee or anything else. I mean, over a decade ago.
How many
honestly
catfish?
Did. I heard your name. It was floating around, so... Hey, how did you come up with that moniker?
Yeah,
I mean, that name. That's a pretty
I was just going to
fun...
ask that. Yeah, how'd you come up with that?
Yeah.
Okay, Bukowski had a friend. Well, he was an editor. He is an Indian guy. His name is Low Dog Reeve, and he's from Indiana. And he had a magazine called Zen Tattoo. And he's a pretty good writer, and he published a lot of Bukowski. Anyway, I sent him some poems, and he liked them, and we became friends. Now, this is probably about 18 years ago. I wrote as Stephen McDerris, probably for about 2 or 3 years, and then the catfish. Anyway, I told him, you know, about me working in the post office, and he thought it was cool because Bukowski worked there and all that, and I told him I was sick of it, though. I was going to quit. I was going to start a catfish farm. And I had actually, you know, had planned it, a catfish farm, you know. And he says, you're nuts, man. He says, I'm going to start calling you catfish. And that was it, man. This Indian guy gave me the name Catfish, and that's where it came from.
That's great. Well, hey, man. Thanks so much for being on, and we're getting ready to go into our second hour. You're welcome to stay on and hang out with us and, you know, shoot the shit and all that.
I'm an old man. I got to go to bed, man. My wife's going to kick.
All right. Well, you know what, Catfish, man, thanks so much for being on. You've been great, and
hey,
you know what? This interview and everything you've had to say has been very, very, very interesting and very cool, you know. It's not often we get someone, you know, like you on here as far as poetry. I'm you know, we're pretty selective about the people we bring on as far as poetry and writers and all that. And, you know, I knew it. I knew that you would have some great stuff to share and all that and had some great stories. And sure as hell, you really did. And you were just, you're right out there. You're out there, man, just exposing yourself completely, 100%. Nothing fake about you. I mean, just
brother.
Beautiful
okay,
shit, and I appreciate it.
Too,
so
man. Arrivederci, Roma. Bye.
All right. Take it easy, Mr. Catfish. All right. That was Catfish McDerris. And, man,
wow.
He just
amazing
laid it out
guy
there for us.
Amazing guy. He's got so much going on.
He does. He has a lot going on. It's wow. He's been around. I mean, he's met a lot of people. He's done a lot of things. And wow, I mean, that's very admirable. I mean, wow. Crap. All right. So I guess we're going to do a little Puff the Magic Dragon. And you know what? After Puff the Magic Dragon, we're going to come back and we are going to have our next featured guest on. Our next featured guest will be, as you all know already, Catrice. Yes, Catrice Cornette. She is a gospel singer, and she has a new single out called Abba Father, and it's really good, and she too has a lot going on and has had a lot going on. And we will talk to her here in just a few minutes, but right now we're just going to do a little Puff the Magic Dragon and be right back.
In a land called Hanau. like when Puff roared out his name. Oh, Puff, the magic dragon, live by the sea and frolic in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Puff, the magic dragon, live by the sea and frolic in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Make way for other toys. One gray night it happened, Jackie Paper came no more. And Puff, that mighty dragon, he ceased his fearless roar. His head was bent in sorrow, green scales fell like rain. Puff no longer went to play along the cherry.
That song just, you know, I used to have a little 45 of it, you know, a little 45 record of it, and played it all the time. It was on, it still does it for me, and still makes me feel puffy. But anyhow, wow, okay, so, yeah, we just talked to Catfish McDerris, and,
amazing
and,
dude.
He was, wow, he laid it out there, and he was great. Great poet, great writer,